with the stars and stripes and the eagle flies.
Good morning.
It's a big old land with countless dreams.
God bless the great state of Michigan. You know, I spent all of last week in Washington, D.C. So it is great to get back to America. You know, it was kind of an interesting week last week in Washington. Pope Francis was in town. It was nothing short of remarkable to sit on the floor of the House of Representatives to listen to the Pope address a joint session of Congress. You know, I will admit the day before, the press conference was a little bit awkward. Every time the reporters addressed a question to Your Holiness, Obama would answer. Well, and then the next day it got even worse. The next day, President Xi of China was in Washington to meet with President Obama. You know, news outlets across the globe reported on this momentous meeting between the world's most powerful communist and the President of China. You know, it is great to be with y'all this morning. I'm sorry there's no hockey game. You know, we're here because our country's in crisis. We're here because we're bankrupting our kids and grandkids. We're here because our constitutional rights are under assault from Washington each and every day. And because America has receded from leadership in the world and it has made the world a much more dangerous place. And yet I'm here this morning with a word of hope and encouragement. All across this country, people are waking up. And I'm here to tell you right now, help is on the way. So I want to ask everyone here to look forward. Look forward to January 2017. If I am elected president, let me tell you what I intend to do on the first day in office. The first thing I intend to do is rescind every single illegal and unconstitutional executive action. You know, the president likes to say he has a phone and he has a pen. Well, you live by the pen, you die by the pen. And my pen has got an eraser. But sadly, the corruption has not been limited to the White House. It has extended to every agency of the federal government. So the second thing I intend to do on the first day in office is instruct the United States Department of Justice to open an investigation into Planned Parenthood and these horrible videos. And to prosecute that organization for any and all criminal conduct they may have committed. The administration of justice should be blind to party or ideology. The only fidelity should be to the laws and the Constitution of the United States. The third thing I intend to do on the first day in office is instruct the Department of Justice and the IRS and every other federal agency that the persecution of religious liberty ends today. That means that every serviceman and servicewoman has the right to seek out and worship God Almighty with all of our hearts, minds, and souls, and their supervising officer has nothing to say about it. And that means that the Little Sisters of the Poor, a Catholic charity that the Obama administration is persecuting right now, will find that the case against them has been dismissed. The fourth thing I intend to do on the first day in office is rip to shreds this catastrophic Iranian nuclear deal. The single greatest threat facing America today is the threat of a nuclear Iran. Now, several months ago, I observed that if this deal goes through, the Obama administration will become, quite literally, the world's leading financier of radical Islamic terrorism. Now, in response to that, President Obama got very upset. And I do so hate to dismay the man. He interrupted his busy world travels in between the eighth and ninth holes to attack me directly. He said, what Cruz said is ridiculous. You can't say that. That rhetoric is too much. Let me give you a very, very simple principle. Truth is not rhetoric. And in the entire course of his attack, the president didn't actually bother to dispute any of the substance of what I'd said. So let's review the facts. Fact number one, Iran is today the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. Fact number two, if this deal goes through, over $100 billion will go to Iran, will go to the Ayatollah Khamenei. Fact number three, if that happens, billions of those dollars will go to Hamas, will go to Hezbollah, to the Houthis, to jihadists across the globe, and they will use those billions to murder Americans, to murder Israelis, and to murder Europeans. And especially Christians. If President Obama doesn't like the administration, if he doesn't like the rhetoric of his administration becoming the world's leading financier of radical Islamic terrorism, there is an easy solution. Stop financing radical Islamic terrorism. The fifth thing I intend to do on the first day in office is begin the process of moving the American Embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, the once and eternal capital of Israel. Now, you know, a lot of presidential candidates, both Democrats and Republicans, have made that exact same promise. And yet, when they get to the White House, they don't do it. Inevitably, their team comes to them and they say, you know, if we do this, it'll make other folks in the Middle East really, really unhappy. Well, if you hadn't noticed, they're already pretty unhappy with us. And the single biggest difference between me and the other very fine men and women standing on that debate stage is that with me, when I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do exactly what I said I would do. That's day one. There are 365 days in a year, 4 years in a presidential term, and 4 years in a second term. By the end of 8 years, there are going to be a whole lot of reporters and journalists and newspaper editors who've checked themselves into therapy. In the days that follow, I will go to Congress, and we will repeal every word of Obamacare. We will pass common sense health care reform that makes health insurance personal and portable and affordable and keeps government from getting in between us and our doctors. In the days that follow, I will instruct the U.S. Department of Education, which should be abolished, I will instruct the Department of Education that Common Core ends today. In the days that follow, we will rebuild our military and we will honor the commitments that have been made to our soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines. That includes that we will protect the constitutional right to keep and bear arms of our servicemen and women to protect themselves. So the next time a jihadist walks into a recruiting center in Chattanooga, he's going to meet the business end of firearms wielded by a dozen Marines. In the days that follow, we will finally, finally, finally secure the borders and end sanctuary cities. We will stop releasing violent, criminal, illegal aliens, and we will pass Kate's Law. In the days that follow, I will take on the EPA. And the CFPB and the alphabet soup of federal agencies that descend like locusts on small businesses, killing jobs all across this country. In the days that follow, I will go to Congress, and we will pass fundamental tax reform. We will pass a simple and fair flat tax. So that every American can fill out his or her taxes on a postcard. And when we do that, we should abolish the IRS. There are about 90,000 employees at the IRS. We need to padlock that building. Take all 90,000 and put them down on our southern border. Now, to our friends in the media, I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. But if you think about it, sir, imagine you traveled thousands of miles in the blazing sun. You're swimming across the Rio Grande, and the first thing you see is 90,000 IRS agents. You'd turn around and go home too. Now, some of y'all may be thinking, all of this makes sense. It's basic common sense. Live within your means. Don't bankrupt our kids and grandkids. Follow the Constitution. But can it be done? Can we do it? You know, Scripture tells us there's nothing new under the sun. I think where we are today is very, very much like the late 1970s. Same failed economic policies, same misery, stagnation, and malaise. The same feckless and naive foreign policy. In fact, the exact same countries, Russia and Iran, openly laughing at and mocking the President of the United States. Now, why is it that that analogy gives me so much hope and optimism? Because we know how that story ended. All across this country, millions of men and women rose up from the grassroots and became the Reagan Revolution. And it didn't come from Washington. Washington despised Ronald Reagan. By the way, if you see a candidate who Washington embraces, run and hide. It came from the American people, and by the way, it started right here in Michigan with the Reagan Democrats, birthplace of the Reagan Democrats right here, working men and women that said, this ain't working, we want to get back to the principles that built America. And the people rising up transformed this country. We went from misery and stagnation to booming economic growth, to millions lifted out of poverty into prosperity, into the American dream. We went from our hostages languishing in Iran to winning the Cold War and tearing the Berlin Wall to the ground. Why am I so optimistic? Because the same thing is happening again. All across this country, people are waking up. You know, when we launched this campaign about 6 months ago at Liberty University, the New York Times promptly opined, Cruz cannot win because the Washington elites despise him. I kind of thought that was the whole point of the campaign. Listen, if you think things are going great in Washington, that we need to keep going in the same basic direction, just kind of fiddle around the edges, then I ain't your guy. On the other hand, if you think Washington is fundamentally broken, if you think there is a bipartisan corruption of career politicians in both parties who get in bed with lobbyists and special interests and grow and grow and grow government, and we need to bring power out of Washington and back to we the people, that is what this campaign is all about. Well, you know, the Times continued. They said, okay, maybe the grassroots are going to be with Cruz. But he ain't going to have any money. Because the Washington elites, they control all the money. And all those lobbyists are with other candidates that aren't going to rock the boat, aren't going to end that gravy train. Well, a couple of months ago, all the campaigns filed their first fundraising reports. Out of 17 Republican candidates, do you know which campaign raised the most hard money? We did. In just over 3 months, together, we raised over $14.3 million. It came from all 50 states, people all over the country, going to tedcruz.org, tedcruz.org, tedcruz.org. It's tedcruz.org. To date, we've had over 300,000 contributions. The average contribution, $81. That is the power of the grassroots. I want to close with this. You know, for everyone here, freedom isn't some abstract concept we read about in a school book. It's real, it's personal. In our lives, our families. You know, for me, I think about my mom. My mom is Irish and Italian, born in Wilmington, Delaware, working class family. Her mom was the second youngest of 17 kids. They were Irish Catholic. They didn't know what else to do on a Saturday night. The fellow up front says, or Sunday, or Monday. My mom became the first person in her family ever to go to college. Now, my grandfather, my mom's dad, was a difficult man. He was a drunk. And he didn't believe women should be educated. And he certainly didn't think his daughter should be the first person in the family to go to college. Well, my mother has a backbone of steel, and my mom stood up to her father. She ended up going to Rice University, graduating in 1956 with a degree in math. She went to work at Shell as a computer programmer. Now, my mom, when I was a kid, she told me, she said she very deliberately didn't learn how to type. She said, look, it was the 1950s. I understood the world I was living in. She said, I didn't want to be walking down the hall and have a man walk up to me and say, sweetheart, would you type this for me? My mom wanted to be able to smile very, very sweetly and with a clean conscience say, I would love to help you out, but I don't know how to type. I guess you're going to have to use me as a computer programmer instead. My mom is a woman of incredible strength of character. She's incredibly loving. She's been a best friend to me my whole life. She turned 80 this past year. She's an unbelievable grandmother to our two little girls, Caroline and Catherine. And then when I think of freedom, I think of my dad. My father was born and grew up in Cuba. And he fought in the Cuban Revolution as a kid. When he was a teenager, my dad was thrown in prison, and he was tortured. They beat him halfway to death in a Cuban prison. When he was lying in the mud and the grime and his own blood, he told me he remembers thinking, I don't have any kids. No family depends on me. It doesn't matter if I live or I die. But thankfully, God had different plans for my father. He fled Cuba in 1957. He came to America. He was just 18. He couldn't speak English. He had $100 that was sewn into his underwear. And he got a job washing dishes, making 50 cents an hour. He worked 7 days a week. He paid his way through school. He and my mother went on to start a small business. Today, my dad is a pastor. He travels the country preaching the gospel. Now, my whole life, my dad has been my hero. But you know, when I was a little boy, he told me over and over again. He said, when we faced oppression in Cuba, I had a place to flee to. If we lose our freedom here, where do we go? That is why all of us are here this morning. We are here this morning because we're not willing to go quietly into the night. We're not willing to give up on our children and grandchildren. And I tell you today, if we continue to come together, if we stand together, if we fight for freedom and we fight for the Constitution, then together, we the people can bring back that last best hope for mankind, that shining city on a hill. That is the United States of America. Thank you.